When you are sick, people give you advice.
I've got your EKG here.
I'm still sick.
I'm recommending you go on a strict diet immediately.
Mr. Burns, I'm afraid you are the sickest man in the United States.
You mean I have pneumonia?
Yes.
Juvenile diabetes?
Yes.
Hysterical pregnancy?
A little bit, yes.
I'm still sick.
I'm still sick.
I'm still sick.
You know you've made it when you've got an opener. This segment's got an opener. What ails you? Today, alcoholism, and our guest, I'm very glad to welcome Dr. Rachel Humanik from the University of Adelaide into our studio. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning, David. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, you are a senior lecturer at the University of Adelaide. You're a registered psychologist. And what's your background? How do we know that? We should be listening to Rachel Humanik right now.
Well, I suppose I've got 25 or so years experience in the area from a number of different perspectives, from a research perspective, a policy perspective. I've spent some time working for the World Health Organization in this area for about 10 years, and also from a clinical perspective, so getting to be with people and help people face-to-face, one-on-one.
What is alcoholism?
Well, I mean, I think what we have to take into perspective first is that alcohol is something that gives us all, or can give us all, a lot of a pleasure and reward. Mm. It's helps us to de-stress, gives us time out to mark the end of a day, mark, you know, special occasions, social activities. But then for some of us, we might start to drink too much, too often, and that's when a pretty predictable set of problems starts to occur related to the fact that alcohol is addictive and that alcohol is a toxin. And there are several criteria to determine whether or not someone might have a problem with alcohol. And if your listeners think about the last 12 months, think about whether or not you've experienced a craving or a strong desire to drink alcohol, or an urge to drink alcohol. And for some people, a few of us, that might be as soon as you get up in the morning. But for a lot of people, it might not come on until the time when you might normally have a drink, so 5 or 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. after work or on a Friday. And for some, another group again, some people find the craving might not begin in earnest until they start to have a drink, and then they find themselves drinking harder and faster than they meant
to. So it can manifest itself in a whole lot of different ways.
Yeah.
For some people, it might be first thing in the morning. Other people, you don't think about it at all during the day, and then you only after you've had your first nip, you think, oh, yeah, I really want this, and then you go for it. So it can show up in different ways.
Well, look, that's the craving side of it, and it does tend to be related to the amount that people drink and how often they drink and their pattern of drinking. So,
what if somebody says, look, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I can go for a long time. You know, it might be days, might be longer without a drink, but then they go on a bender.
Mm.
Is that a kind of alcoholism?
Well, that's, I guess, one of the things that I was talking about here with craving. For some people, they may be able to go for a long period of time without having a drink and everything's okay. And then they have a couple drinks, usually in a social situation, and they may say to themselves, well, I'm only going to have a couple, you know. I'll keep it tidy tonight. And then they end up finding that after the first one or two, the craving just takes off. Yeah. And they start drinking quite a bit.
That's the voice of Dr. Rachel Humanik, and she's from the University of Adelaide in our studio today talking about alcoholism. Now, if you've got a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-300-222-891. Alan has done that from the Adelaide Hills. Hello, Alan.
Good morning. And thank you, Doctor. I go attend AA meetings, mm-hmm. and one thing I've sort of said to the secretary, whatever, who's controlling this, why can't we sort of have a medical person to not give a lecture, but to point out the bad things that will happen. I mean, health and mental and everything. And no one's taken any notice so far. I don't know if this exists, but I just asked the doctor, and it has to be voluntary because AA is voluntary pretty much. They can't support AA, they can't pay out a big fee. So I'm just wanting comments. Thank you.
So, Alan, you're saying you go to AA meetings and no one turns up and talks about the health implications?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. What do they talk about?
Recovery and, you know, their experiences and everything like that. So, but to me, I thought it's a sort of a scary thing. If someone was to attend a meeting and say, if you keep on drinking, this is what's going to happen. You end up with, you know, brain damage, everything.
Alan, thanks for your call. Rachel, have you much experience, because you've done a lot of research in the area of alcoholism and withdrawal from severe alcoholism. Do you know much about the AA movement and how it works? What do you get at these meetings?
Well, I think that's probably something that AA is, as Alan said, it's self-governing, and so I think Alan would need to speak to the people within AA about whether or not they want someone to come along and speak to them about the health effects of alcohol. But, I mean, generally at AA meetings, what happens is people share how alcohol has impacted on them and on their lives in a more sort of social area or a relationship area. So, I mean, I know often when I speak about the harms related to drinking, and there are, Alan's right, there are a huge number of physical harms, and it impacts on society and on the burden of health in a significant way. But I know when I talk about it, people's eyes often glaze over, and it may not be the thing that motivates people because it's not right here, right now. It's not a something that's in your face necessarily right now. It's a risk that's down the track. I don't have to worry about that right now. But the things that do motivate people to change tend to be the things that are happening to them now, which is, you know, often from an AA perspective, and also I see clinically as well, how it impacts on their relationships with other people, how it creates a tension in relationships, how they might have be losing their partners or not be able to look after their children properly, how it may be stopping them from doing their job well, or maybe they've lost their job completely. And also it stops them from being the person that they want to be, the person... you know, they might have certain goals or dreams or likes that they want to do, but the fact that they're spending so much time drinking or recovering from drinking means that they can't achieve those goals for their life. So it usually ends up being quite a dissatisfied person.
Is alcoholism genetic?
Look, there is a genetic component to it. I'm not a geneticist at all. But there are a portion of us who have a gene for alcoholism. And what I guess part of what that means is that we find the effects of alcohol very salient. We really like that. We really like the effect. Mm. But it's not – just because you have the gene, it doesn't mean you're therefore destined to become dependent on alcohol or an alcoholic in inverted commas, because there are a whole lot of other factors that are involved, like our socioeconomic status, our other social factors, relationships with people.
Could a person who hasn't got that gene still end up becoming an alcoholic because they develop a psychological dependency on the drug?
Oh, someone without the gene can definitely become dependent. We could all become dependent if we put our minds to it.
Right.
And it's not, yes, look, we can develop a psychological dependence, but alcohol is a very physically addictive drug.
And it doesn't matter who you are.
No, it doesn't matter who you are. If you drink, excessively and you drink regularly, our brain goes through changes, which means that, and the changes our brain goes through are to compensate for the fact that alcohol is there so often.
Mm.
And what happens is then when we drink less or when we stop drinking, those brain changes are still in place. And when we stop drinking, our brain is suddenly going, oh, my God, something's wrong. I need this alcohol to re-equilibrate
myself.
And that's
what a craving is.
Well, it's what a craving is. It's what underlies tolerance, which is needing to drink more than you did when you first started drinking to get the same effect. But it also is what mediates some of the withdrawal features that we see when people stop drinking. So tremor, being very sweaty, not being able to sleep very well, feeling very anxious, blood pressure going up, feeling nauseous, diarrhea, vomiting, all those kinds of things.
Getting lots of texts coming in, and some of them really very painful. One person says, I'm watching my daughter slowly kill herself with alcohol and I can't get her to help herself. If the person doesn't want to help themselves, is there anything that can be done?
Look, that's a really hard question, because there's these two kind of broad competing forces. The first is, well, look, people do need to want to make a change themselves in order to start the ball rolling. And, you know, we need to have an intrinsic motivation to make us want to actually stop something that is now, you know, addictive. It's not just, well, I'm choosing to go and buy a chocolate bar and eat it because I like it. It's something that is actually addictive. And when we don't have it, it feels incredibly uncomfortable. But then on the other hand, alcohol is a socially disruptive drug. So what that means is it impacts on the people around us. We become less available. We become sad. We become anxious. We're not attending our usual obligations. And so saying something to someone that you care about as to how their alcohol use might be impacting on you can also be a lever for people to make change. And when I see people clinically, a lot of people are coming in saying that they're there partly because their partners have said that they want them to come, or partly because they've said their relationship's in trouble.
That's the voice of Dr. Rachel Humanik. Rachel is a registered psychologist and she's a senior lecturer at the University of Adelaide. She's worked in this area of alcohol and drug research and clinical practice for nearly 30 years. So we thought she'd be a good person to come in and talk to us in What Ails You Today as we discuss alcoholism. Barry's called from Coffin Bay. Hello, Barry.
Hello, how are you going, man?
Good, Barry. What's your experience?
Well, my experience was because of the similarity or the comparison between drugs and alcohol, it makes it very, very difficult as in terms of becoming an alcoholic. Now, I was working in a Calicri coalfield, and my son and that went to school there. And, of course, the same as every other kid, and this is the point I want to make, the same as every other kid, they learn to smoke, learn to drink, without their parents' knowledge. And so they did this, and out of 100 people, there would be 100 that didn't affect apart from smoking. But there's a few who, bang, they became alcoholics, and that was actually one of the biggest problems in Lee Creek was drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
And then what happens then, though, is here's this person who is losing everything. It's not just because of the booze. They're up in the pub, they're happy then, they're drinking all the money they're having. They've probably got a partner very often that does the same. And so all this money's going out, and then they start to lose, well, I guess, faith in themselves. Like they used to be, my son used to be very strong, and all of a sudden he wasn't strong. He was starting to lose quite a bit of his eyesight. He was into guns and that, and restoring guns, and so he was a hell of a shot. Well, now he's not. He wasn't, because of the fact that he couldn't see the sights properly, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he's losing his job. Yeah. He also knows he won't be employed by anyone else in the country town.
Yeah.
You see, it just goes on and on. The thing is that there's a big difference between drugs and alcohol. alcohol sneaks in like a submarine under good times. You know, you start off having good times with alcohol, as in having a drink, basically. And then you go up the pub and after work and then your birthdays and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Barry.
But
Barry, we're going to have to move on, but I think I think we hear pretty clearly what you're saying. Rachel, what do you say to Barry? It sneaks up on you like a submarine?
Look, that's a really good saying. I might use it therapeutically, if you don't mind, Barry. I'm really sorry to hear about your son. Look, there's a proportion of people, and it will be like that. It can sneak in like a submarine, and the more we drink and the more often we drink, the more likely we are to want to drink more. And it's not only demonstrated by having cravings that means that we've got possibly a problem with alcohol. It's when we continue to drink, even though we might be experiencing health, social, legal, or financial problems because of our drinking. It's when we're not fulfilling our usual role obligations, and that might be at work or at home or with your family or kids. It means when we continue to drink, even though our partners or family or friends or doctor might have expressed some kind of concern about our drinking. It's when we think we want to try and cut down and stop, and we try and do it, but every single time it seems to not work terribly well, and it kind of feels like you've lost control over your drinking. It's noticing when you need more alcohol than you did when you first started drinking to get an effect. So that's why people can drink, you know, huge amounts and still be standing upright. And it's when you might notice withdrawal symptoms when you cut down or stop.
Carol wants to know, how do you help someone you love recognise their abuse?
Look, that's a hard thing, and I think there's two things that the person, Carol, maybe should try and get some help for herself, to talk to someone about it, and to look after yourself psychologically and physically so you get some time out. But also it's about talking to the person honestly and openly about how their drinking might be impacting on you and how you might be worried about them. So sort of a very genuine conversation about how concerned you are about them.
Well, Jason says, please let people know that alcoholics have AA, partners, children and families of the alcoholics themselves can get support through the sister organisation, Al Anon. This person, Jason, says there is help. So you might not be the alcoholic. You might be living with them. Al Anon is something that he suggests you take a look at. Tom's called from Woodville. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, guys. How you going?
Good. What are your thoughts?
Just wondering for an opinion from Rachel. Perhaps I've put myself in that third category, maybe, where I might go a month or a couple of months without a drink, no hassles, but then I've battled to have just a couple. Like if I go out just for a dinner, I'll have a couple, but I want to have a proper dip. Have you got any techniques, perhaps, for not just me, but for other people who might just struggle to have one or two drinks?
Right, you want to keep it to just one or two?
Yeah.
Well, if I could answer that in 5 minutes, I'd be I'd be earning a lot of money. But just some quick tips is that we can only metabolise one standard drink of alcohol an hour, and one standard drink is like 2/3 of a stubby of full-strength alcohol, or 1/8 of a bottle of wine, or one nip of spirits. So once we start to go over that one standard drink an hour, once we start to drink faster than that, then it impacts the part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is involved in decision-making and impulse control. And so when we drink faster, we are actually impairing ourselves to make the decisions that we want to make when we're sober. So basically, slowing the rate of drinking down is a good idea, spacing your drinks with non-alcoholic drinks. But there are also other places where you can get, and that's just a couple ideas of things that you can do. But there, to get more, to find out places where you can get, to find out where you can get more help, like AA or Al-Anon or go and see a private prescriber, or maybe you want to go and see a drug and alcohol counsellor that's free, you can go to the Know Your Options website, which is put out by the Department of Health, South Australian Department of Health, or you can ring the Alcohol and Drug Information Service, which is 1300 13 13 40. And both those places offer people options to get help for themselves or to either try and help a loved one.
Okay. But the first thing is that Tom's actually on the money when he says, I think there's an issue here. I would like to restrict my drinking to just a couple of drinks, and I need help in that area. Mm-hmm. The first thing is he's identified the problem. Mm-hmm. He should be restricting it to just a couple of drinks, because anything more than that, he's going to have difficulty metabolizing.
Yeah, look, that's exactly right. And lots and lots of research has been done on this over many, many years. And what we've found is that when people exceed two standard drinks of alcohol on a regular basis, then it puts them at risk of a range of chronic diseases, because alcohol impacts on pretty much every part of our body. It's a very dirty drug, so it impacts on our brain, on our heart, obviously our liver, gastrointestinal system. Mm. So when we go over two standard drinks on a regular basis, that impacts on our risk of getting a chronic disease and us dying much, much earlier than what we might have done before. But with what Tom, I think, was talking about, acute risk. So that's things that happen while you're drinking alcohol. So we know that things like having a fall or getting into the car or car accidents or getting into fights or being the victim of an assault. There's a lot of deaths in Australia that occur from that, and we know that when people go over four standard drinks, that's when their risk of that kind of thing happening to them occurs, and there's around about 1,300 deaths a year in Australia from acute alcohol-related incidences.
Now, we've had so many people who wanted to talk to you, and so many texts coming in, and some people are saying they've appreciated the segment so much, we must get you back in to continue the discussion. But let's finish with Susan from Glenunga. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. I'd like to ask the psychologist a question regarding, is alcoholism classed as a lifelong illness, or can you be classed as an ex-alcoholic? I know that sounds bizarre, but just that a very close family member lost his driver's license for the fourth time, and then he had to apply to the court to get it back, and he had to go to a clinic for 3 months, and the clinic at that time said that he was no longer an alcoholic, so he could have his license back, which is proved wrong. But I was just wondering how you think about that.
Dr. Rachel Humanick from Adelaide University. Is alcoholism for life?
Not necessarily, no. No, for some people it will be a lifelong battle. It will be a lifelong struggle, and they will possibly have periods of long periods of abstinence and then periods where they drink again. But for other people, they may have one or two bites of the sherry and then they do manage to successfully stop or control their drinking.
Maggie, thank you for this quote, Maggie. She says she loves this from Barry Humphreys. After he quit heavy drinking, Barry Humphreys said, "You've got out of the lion's den, so don't go back for your hat." It's not a bad way of putting it, is it? Why would you risk it? Good advice from Barry.
That's great.
Dr. Rachel Humanick, thank you for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
You've been very generous with your time. We appreciate that. Affiliate senior lecturer at University of Adelaide, and Rachel's been working in this area of alcohol and drug research for about 30 years, registered psychologist. And will you come back?
If you'll have me.
How was that?
It was okay, actually. I've had surgery that's been less painful, but no, it was fun, sort of.
Good on you for coming in, Rachel. We appreciate it.